Hello, welcome to This Week in the Atlantic Coast Conference, the podcast for allsportsdiscussion.com. This is Jeff, and you can follow me on Twitter at TalkinACCSports. That's at TalkinACCSports. We have a special guest host tonight, Dan Caro, filling in for our usual podcast host, at ASD underscore Hokey Smash Matthew. Dan is the owner and operator of an excellent Virginia Tech site, treadmillhorse.com. That's treadmillhorse.com, TreadmillHorse.com. You can follow Dan on Twitter at treadmillhorse, and that's at TreadmillHorse. All right, Dan, do you want to take it over from here to introduce our guest, Tim? And he looks like he's on and ready to go.
Yeah, super excited to have Tim on the show tonight. So he's a terrific return guest. You can follow him on Twitter at TimThomasTLP. He's the owner and operator of TechLunchPail.com. And you can follow his site account at TechLunchPailD on Twitter. And before we hop into Tim, I just want to say Tim has a great site, has great content on Twitter. I'm a regular follower and reader of his blog. Like, if you want to get the inside skinny on what's coming up with any Virginia Tech sport and what's coming up, like, what's the next thing that's coming? I think he has a great site, a great Twitter account to follow to get that. So just to get us rolling, so Tim, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, I appreciate that, Dan and Jeff. Always great to be on the podcast here. And yeah, no, I appreciate those kind words a lot. Look, I've been grateful since I started this website back in February 1st, 2015, after spending a year running the Fighting Gobbler over on the Fan Side Network. I was a freshman in college when I launched this, so a lot has changed in over 9 years now of growing the Tech Lunch Bail. Of course, last summer launching our TLP Insider subscription, which has been a good success so far. It's really allowed us to continue to grow what we do. We are able to actually pay one of our student writers to produce more content. We've been able to invest more in our travel budgets as well. To keep growing this, because this is not a full-time operation for me yet. That's the hope and the dream, and you know, the support that you guys have shown over the years, both Jeff and Dan, both of you guys, and Matthew as well, it's been fantastic ever since. You know, I mean, this podcast, I came on here the first week after we launched Tech Lunch Pail. We had set up when I was running the Fighting Gobbler still, and came on. So I'm a 2018 grad of Virginia Tech as well, civil engineering degree, which, yeah, it's a crazy idea to have a get an engineering degree and then try to build a media company. It's not exactly what you call maybe the best financial decision in the world, but it's a fun decision. And I've been fortunate to have some incredible writing talents over the years, many of whom have gone on the great things and more of whom will continue to go. We got some great runs right now, obviously, with Will Lachlan, who's about to graduate. If you're someone who has in the media business, and you're listening to this podcast, hire that man, especially in the basketball realm. Hire that man. He's a fantastic writer. Another great talent coming out of Virginia Tech in the Bill Roth program. Ryan Duvall continues to be great for us on the baseball beat and so many more. Tucker Terry's been great for a great addition to our team as well this year. So we got a great team of people. We've had plenty of great people come before us. People like Evan Hughes, who briefly was with us for a time. Now, of course, the voice of Virginia Tech women's basketball and baseball, David Cunningham, the managing editor over TSL, was with us for a little bit. Mike McDaniel wrote for us for a period of time. Of course, now at Sports Illustrated, Matthew Atkins, a legend for us as well. I've been fortunate to have a lot of great people as well. And we keep growing, and that's the goal, to keep growing and building on what we're doing. And, you know, it's a great time to be covering Virginia Tech, especially on the football front. And I know we'll get into a lot of that tonight, because I'll tell you, that is a program that is trending in the right direction for the first time, it feels like, since in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I will say that it's an impressive amount of content coming out of Tech Lunch Pail. So, yeah, if you're an ACC fan, and especially if you're a Virginia Tech fan, Give Tim's site, well, give Tim's Twitter account a follow, but also check out the site because they're doing some great things over there. So we can both agree that Virginia Tech had a very eventful 2023-2024 men's and women's basketball season. So Tim, do you want to start us off by taking a look back at like the Tech men's and women's basketball seasons and also give us a quick look ahead to next year for both of those teams?
Yeah, Dad. Gosh, if last season already feels like it was multiple years ago with these off season for these programs. I mean, this is, it has been a crazy off season to say the least for both, but you know, obviously the women's basketball front, it's unfortunately for Virginia Tech fans, you know, alums, you know, it's another what if to add. What if that injury to Liz Kittley didn't happen? I actually was traveling down to Florida. Fortunately, Will, we had a couple riders on site who were able to get the, be on there to cover that story as it was developing. I was actually on vacation. But yeah, I mean, this was a season of what if. This was a team that was obviously trending in the right direction again. They were peaking at the right time, surging in February. I mean, they were the number five team going into that week. By the NCAA Tournament Committee. They're right off of being a one seed. They have that loss in Notre Dame, but they're still at least in good shape to be a two, maybe even get to a one if they go win the ACC Tournament, which was very much in play with a healthy Liz Kittley. Kittley gets hurt. You know, they struggle from there, lose at UVA, beat Miami, which might have took the Canes out of the NCAA Tournament, and then get routed by Notre Dame. They find themselves, but it's a season of what if. You know, it's a season of what if, and yet at the same time, on the women's front, like a tremendous accomplishment to win the ACC regular season title. I'll tell you all the time, look, it takes a lot to win a conference tournament. Don't get me wrong, but it is way more impressive to win the regular season title. That is it. Look, I know people consider more the tournaments the conference champion. I get it, but I consider the regular season champ ultimately the true champion of the league. Now, that may change a little as these conferences get so bloated to where you're only playing everybody once a year, but that is a tremendous accomplishment for this team. You know, this was a team that, like I said, was trending in the right direction. This was a national title contender. Obviously, South Carolina was head and shoulders above everybody else, but this was one of the teams when Liz Kittley was healthy, they looked at it and said, okay, this is one of the teams that could beat South Carolina. When they're playing their best, Virginia Tech could beat South Carolina. There was a tier with Iowa, UConn, LSU, and a few others as well. They probably throw in there Stanford, Texas, maybe Ohio State. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a heartbreaking end. And then on the men's side, you know, it's just a little disappointing. You know, I think it's fair to be a little disappointed. Look, this is a program that's the standards have been raised a ton. It's a tough job. But the standards have been raised a ton, given the success Buzz had and given the success Mike Young has had. And I think everybody would agree it was just a little disappointing. They just weren't good on the road at all this year on the men's side. It was just horrendous. I mean, you flip a couple of those road games, and there's a decent – Virginia Tech might have been in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's how close these margins can get. Now, obviously, this was an exceptional bubble year. This was the first time in a long time I think we could say the bubble – left some pretty solid teams on the outside looking in for various reasons. And then, of course, UVA somehow, you know, look, their resume lived up to it. It wasn't pretty on the court, but they built a resume somehow. But you look at Virginia Tech, and I think just a little disappointing not to be, you know, in that bubble picture at least with what they had. And we can get into as well some of the obviously the offseason stuff, but in a minute here, but I think the women's basketball season is going to be defined by a what if, but an incredible 2-year stretch, an incredible just run. And on the men's side, you know, it's all right. It was a tad disappointing. I think it's the first time in a few years you say that was a little disappointing given expectations, and there wasn't necessarily a big injury thing like the previous year with Couture's injury that kind of could throw them off. It just didn't come together on the men's basketball front this year.
So a couple of follow-up questions before we turn it over to Jeff and get into football. So my first question is, what are your thoughts on Megan Duffy, Virginia Tech's new women's basketball coach, coming over from Marquette?
Yeah, I think, look, I feel pretty good about the hire that Tech has made here. I think it's impressive the hire. The Big East in women's hoop is not the Big East in men's hoops, but it's still a power conference. It's still a good league. And I think it's pretty clear that you look at what she did over 5 years at Marquette, and look, she inherited a good program. And that's always something I wonder, right? When you inherit a good program, did you keep it going? Were your best years at the beginning, or could you at least keep it there, if not keep it going higher? And she did. She did keep it going there. You know, I think she did a pretty darn good job over five seasons. Obviously, made the NCAA tournament the past 2 years and years 4 and 5. That's a very good indication of the trajectory that she was on. You know, like I said, like I always have a hesitancy at a situation like that because of that. But we've seen, like I said, when coaches could show that, and when they have some of these high-profile backgrounds, they get to see. Look at Josh Heupel on the football front. Josh Heupel, you know, was after Scott Frost at UCF, did good, but wasn't crazy great. And then I would say, you know, kind of dropped back, unlike Duffy on the women's basketball front at Marquette, but, you know, proved to be a pretty darn good coach. And obviously, we've seen what he's done at Tennessee on the football front. So I like the hire. She's clearly very popular in the industry. Miami was very much, she was involved there as well. I think it's a great hire, and it was a show, okay, we are still investing here, at least in that realm, and staffing and coaching, the investment is still.
And if we have just one more second on basketball, I also want to get your thoughts on Virginia Tech's men's basketball transfers that Mike Young has brought in this offseason.
Yeah, Dan, I think it's Moneyball. You know, I've never watched the movie Moneyball, which may be a surprise to many. I probably need to one of these days, but this is Moneyball. I mean, Tech's got one of the worst NIL budgets. From what I've heard, I mean, I've heard it's around the $900K to $1 million mark. And from what it seems like media research out there and studies and reports out there, that if you want to be the ACC, if you want to be in the middle of the ACC, you got to be $1.5-2 million on your budget. I mean, that's a significant gap. And I think, yes, David Teal had a great interview with Mike Young, and he said he feels has the resource to compete. You know, I'll say this about Mike Young. He loves Virginia Tech. And I think sometimes that means he's not willing to go out and pump. He's willing to kind of honestly put himself in the line of fire when maybe the line of fire should be at the AD and at Triumph, and the decisions they've made, the focus more on football and the honesty of, hey, because the reality is I think they're still behind. I think they're still bottom tier. And I like the transfers that they brought in, but if you had to tell me today where do I think Virginia Tech is going to be next season with what they have, I mean, you have a lot of guys who are making jumps up, big jumps up into a power conference. I mean, NIT bubble, and I know that is not – that is kind of a dissenting take from a lot of Tech fans right now. But look, and I think there's a ton of potential because you look at how these pieces can fit. A guy like Jordan Ivy Curry is a very good scorer. Hysier Miller, very inefficient, but he's a good passer. He's a good defender. If he can play in that role, if he doesn't have to be a lead scorer for this team, there's a lot more potential to get to the NCAA tournament. But if he's got to be a lead scorer, they may not make the NIT. With the inefficiency he showed at Temple. Like I said, Ivy Curry, Ben Burnham seems like a very intriguing piece. Toby LaWall, tons of potential with the athleticism he has, the rebounding he showed, but he also never started one game for VCU in 2 years. Roddy Brown's obviously a role player. You know, you're going to need some of those returns like Poti and Jane Young to keep moving up as well. And like I said, there's no guarantee with these transitions. There's a lot of guys who jump up from lower levels to the power conferences and we're averaging 15, 20 a game, and then they end up averaging 7 to 10 a game the next year. So it's risky business, but it's the business that Mike Young had to do because when you have that many transfers and you're in the NIL situation for men's basketball that Tech is, this is the reality. And I mean, I would have to dive deeper, but you look at what some of these other programs, just mid-level programs in the ACC on the basketball front have done in the portal, and you kind of have to shrug your shoulders and be like, they're in much better shape than Tech, in terms of NIL, what they can offer. Like I said, I think the pieces, you can see the vision of how the roles that each player is going to have which is a big plus. But that's the question is, can they elevate? Can these guys truly do it at this level? And if not, all of them can't. You know, it's one of those things where you lose one pier of a bridge, and that could be it, you know, because that's kind of the money ball way. If you want to get to the NCAA tournament, that's kind of what Tech has to do here because they don't have the NIL. And that's not necessarily Mike Young's fault. Maybe it's partly his, but that's a lot of decisions in terms of focusing on football and looking at the future of the ACC and knowing, hey, we may not want to be here in the ACC much longer. We want to get to the Power Two. And we know football is the way we have to position ourselves. And whether we like it or not, that's kind of the reality.
So, Tim, I realize you have a really busy schedule with all you do at Tech Lunch, but please do me a favor and go see Moneyball when you get the chance. It's an awesome movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I think I like it a lot because I'm a big sports fan, but beyond that, I think anybody would like the movie, so I think you should check it out. And with that, I'm going to kick it over to Jeff because I know Jeff's got some football questions for you.
All right. Thanks, Dan. All right, Tim, as we look towards football, what are some of the major strengths coming back next year for the Virginia Tech football team? And I got a feeling you're going to mention the quarterback position.
Yeah, Jeff, I mean, there's a lot of things. Like, that's the fun part about this, Jeff. There are a lot of things, and you can just circle skill talent on offense. Look at quarterback with Kyron Drones. I mean, he might be the best returning quarterback in the league, or best quarterback in the league for next year. Him or Cam Ward at Miami. I mean, you know, with what Tech has returned and what Miami has, you know, added in the portal, that Tech-Miami game may be the biggest week five, might be the biggest Tech-Miami game we've seen since 2017 at least. I mean, this could be. A lot of hype. But yeah, Kyron Drones, I mean, look, they figured out, they built the offense around him. They played to his strengths, his dual threat abilities. They use a lot of smart stuff, RPOs, and just some option stuff. Like, I think one of the most underrated moves they made was bringing in Brent Davis, the former offensive coordinator at Army, who has an old-school triple-option background, and they modernized and brought some of that into a modern offense, and it worked. And it worked brilliantly. So I think what Drones brings, what Bashal Tutin as a running back, there's just so much versatility. There are so many great skills. I mean, Tutin has such great explosiveness. He's great between the tackles. His balance is incredible. I mean, this is a guy if you get him off balance, he can get back on balance. You better take him down yourself, because if you're just going to put a hit on him and think that's going to knock him down, good luck. And you look at that receiving core, that might be the best unit Virginia Tech has. And by the way, running back Malachi Thomas is a heck of a backup. I think he's been forgotten about. He is a heck of a backup to have. Then you look at that wide receiver room. I mean, you bring Allie Jennings back into the fold healthy, which feels almost, because he only played a game and a few snaps against Purdue, it feels like a brand new addition to the team. And then you have Jalen Lade coming back. You have Daquan Felton, who's got insane potential. Stephen Gosnell, Aiden Green. He's going to be a sophomore and is maturing and continues to develop more and more. More young guys as well. Tekai Heath, healthy. He was a guy I think they were bigger on. And if he doesn't get injured on his first career snap at Rutgers and miss the rest of the season, I think he would have had a larger role as that second slot guy behind Lane. I mean, there's just so much skill talent. And then on the other side, you look at what they have in the secondary at corner, especially Dorian Strong and Mansoor Delane, might be as good of a quarterback duo as there is in the country. Not just the ACC, in the country. Both of those guys are playmakers. You look at the pass rushing. I mean, Antoine Power Island's one of the best pass rushers in America. Cole Nelson, Keyshawn Berger. It is incredible how defensive line's become a strength. The transfers they brought in, Aeneas Peoples. I mean, when you bring in an all-ACC transfer at defensive tackle, I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure that's going to work. You know, it's not like you're jumping up for the Sun Belt, which is a good league, or the American or whatever. You got a guy who's proven himself, hey, I'm really darn good in this league. And he's leading your way in that spot with Josh Fuga. Kamari Copeland's got tons of potential. Kelvin Gilliam and some of these other guys. It's another spot that you really like. So there's a lot of strengths for this team. And that's got to be something if you're a Tech fan, it's a lot of playmakers all over both sides of the football. And look, there's a reason why they're going to be favored at 10 out of 12 games. And all of those reasons, all those position groups are big reasons why.
All right, Tim, let's go to the flip side now. What are some of the major weaknesses for the Hokies going into the season? In other words, what do you think Virginia Tech will be working on before the first game? You know, what are the questions that you think have to be resolved to have a successful season?
Offensive line. It starts in the trenches on the offensive side. This wasn't a good unit last year, Jeff, and they improved as the season progressed. That was encouraging, but this wasn't a good unit. And the unfortunate thing is, that's their top need is probably another offensive tackle in the portal. There's just none in the portal this time of year. There's barely any. You're taking flyers. You're taking big risk. I mean, outside of SMU's Marcus Bryant, I mean, I can't think of a guy. Champley out of Arkansas, but both of those guys are off the board for Tech. There's not really a guarantee. There's some intriguing flyers at risk, but in Tech saw last year, Clayton Frady didn't work out at all. So you need some guys to step up, and I think you got some good foundations with Chaplin at left tackle, Xavier Chaplin, bringing him on Tavius Cunningham from Georgia State. You know, you do wonder, Parker Clemens did not look good in the spring game at all, and that's one sample size, one data point of 15 spring data points. But he has, you know, after showing so much potential as a freshman, just hasn't really been that good the past 2 years. And you wonder, Cunningham maybe slides back out. He's a little undersized, but he's got long arms, which you can make work at that right tackle spot like he did at Georgia State. You know, and how some of these other guys develop on the interior of the offensive line as well. So it's a spot. That's the biggest spot, I think. Linebacker, you have to talk about linebacker. They brought in a true Mike and Sam Brunfeld. How will he continue along? It's still a jump going from Middle Tennessee to Virginia Tech. I like a lot of his potential and what he did against quality opponents like Missouri and Alabama and Liberty, some of the toughest teams he played last year, but it's still a jump. But I think it's going to help having a true Mike to organize the defense. But let's see how it plays out. And like I said, on the other linebacker spot, Kelly Lawson's got so much potential. But can he, you know, get the consistency? You know, I think Kelly Lawson could be helped by having a true Mike next to him, kind of like he had with Dax Hallifield in 2022 when he had that breakout finish of the year. Jaden McDonald forced his way in the lineup as he's progressed. He's got a lot of talent. So those are a couple spots. And then that second safety spot I got some concerns about. But we'll see. But there's not a lot.
All right. Tim, who are some of the new recruits or transfer portal players that you are impressed with the most so far in the spring? And do you think that any will start get major playing time right away?
Yeah, Jeff, I think it's one of those things where there wasn't a lot of needs for the portal. And that shows. There's so much returning talent. That showed in the draft as well. No Hokies drafted, but barely anyone was eligible from Tech. Because almost all of them, everybody who could return basically is back. But you have to start with Peebles. Coming from Duke, all ACC guy, great pass rusher as a defensive tackle, just a playmaker. I think, you know, he's going to be a guy who probably gets all ACC, preseason all ACC consideration with what he said. I think there's a lot of excitement there. Montavious Cunningham, I like to say his mobility. I saw there was a great pull play from working at guard that helped set up a touchdown in the spring game. I like his mobility. He seems light on his feet. I like him, whether it's guard or tackle, he's got to be a guy you got to have start. Brunfeld is going to be key at that Mike linebacker spot. Having a true Mike, I think, is really going to help this team this year. Even if he's not that great of a player, if he can, he knows how to run a defense. And that's going to be so key because I don't think they had that leadership at the Mike spot with some guys who weren't necessarily used to that role, which I think hurt them last year in terms of just base alignment. That was an issue some of the time, and that's hurt, you know, why they gave up a lot of big plays defensively. So I think that helps. That's what you need from him. And the other two transfer, Gilliam and Copeland, I'm intrigued to see how those guys can break in the rotation. Maybe one of them takes the other starting defensive tackle job over Josh Fugo. We'll see. And then you look at it was a very good recruiting class for Tech, but because they have so much back, there's not a lot of need for these guys to immediately step up. One guy, Quinnen Reddish, 4-star safety out of Charlotte, late riser, actually from the same high school as Adonis Alexander. And you look at the physique, you look at the size, it almost, and you look at the fact that he was kind of a, you know, late riser, more, you know, Reddish kind of actually got on the radar, unlike Alexander. Like, you know, it feels like we're having deja vu potentially. He looks like a guy who can absolutely contribute this fall more than any other true freshman this year. Partly because safety there is more opening there. I think Tech is looking for him to contribute, at least rotationally, if not maybe even push Mose Phillips and Jalen Jones for that job. And Braylon Johnson, the sophomore corner, who, you know, I think when he got here, people thought, okay, safety. That's what I thought. That's what I had heard, that people around Tech thought he could start at safety even. And, well, he started, ended up working out pretty darn good at corner, but now he's working at safety, and he might be the guy there as well. I know he doesn't fall into the transfer recruit, but that's another guy to watch in that regard. But yeah, Quentin Reddish would not shock me if he's in that rotation. He's got so much potential. He was insanely productive in high school. He looked the part. He, I think, was pretty decent in the spring game. Played early too, I think, which says a lot about the fact that they threw him out there early in the game. I think he started technically for one of the two teams. So clearly they're big on him. Clearly they've been impressed with what they've seen. I think he's the one freshman I'm sure is going to break into the two deep. And then just because there isn't a lot of need, they really don't need these guys to step in. There's really not much else in terms of freshmen. I mean, there's a lot of these guys got tons of potential. It's a great class. But Tech brought so much back that they're in a great spot in many ways.
All right, good stuff there, Tim. Do you think Virginia Tech will be better than last year? Why or why not? And then talk about what you think are the two most important games for the Hokies this year, and give us your thoughts on those two games. And then finally, give us your overall record for the Hokies this season.
Yeah, I think, look, this is an important year. I think they absolutely should be better this year. I think it would be, if they go 7-6, that would be almost be a red flag for me. To be honest, when you return as much as Tech does, and it's not like you're returning bad production. You're returning good production. You're returning a team that really figured out as the season progressed, finished the season well. Can they make that next step? That's what they got to do, and I think they're more than talented to do so. And they're going to be favored in 10 of 12 games. Like, there's no excuses for them to be 7-5 or even 8-4 for that matter. At the end of the day, when you're favored in 10 of 12 games, then the two you're not is at Miami, which we've seen Miami not live up to expectations plenty of times before, even though this is looking like a really good Miami team. But we've said that before. And a Clemson program that continues to be very good, but, you know, feels a little in the wilderness right now. And that game is in Lane Stadium against, like I said, a much more vulnerable Clemson than the last time. So, yeah, I think I think those two games, you know, Miami is obviously a huge one. You know, I look at it this way, is you got to look at both the two biggest games at Miami and Clemson. And then you got to look right before that at, on the Miami front, you got a physical game against Rutgers where Tech may be 3-0, tempted to look ahead to a big rivalry primetime Friday night showdown on short rest. And that's going to be a physical football game against a Rutgers team that is a solid program. Greg Schiano's built a tough program, and they're going to come and fight. With Kyle Manungai back and company, I think, like I said, Tech is a much better team than when they played Rutgers last time, last season, and will rightly be favored. And that game being Blacksburg helps, but that's not going to be an easy game. That's a big game. If you can get off the 4-0, that's what they should do. That's a big game. And then it gives yourself the chance of that Miami game. And then on the other side, leading into that Clemson game, look, you may have a lot of momentum, and there could be a lot of hype around that game. But those 2 weeks before, at Syracuse right before, we don't know what Fran Brown's going to be. They've brought in a ton of talent, though, and it's undeniable the talent they brought in. Fran Brown's first-time head coach, we'll see how it plays out. But Syracuse got a lot of talent. That could be a dangerous trap game. And there's going to be probably a lot of talk that could be a trap game, which then makes a trap game the week before that at home against a Georgia Tech team that has Haynes King back, who's probably one of in the upper third, you know, maybe QB3 in all the ACC going into this year. Yes, it's at home, but Brent Key has got that Georgia Tech program heading in the right direction. So I know it's more than two games, but those three games as well, Tech's going to be favored. Rutgers, Georgia Tech at Syracuse. You can't slip up. This is where you got to show some maturity, show some growth, and take care of your business in general. You know, if I had to put a too early record prediction, I'm split between 9-3 and 10-2. And I know that's going to be on the high side, probably. But the reality is, when you're favored in 10 out of 12 games, you probably should go 10-2 in some ways. And you probably, or at least go 9-3. And I think if Tech does not go 9-3 or better, which I know is ambitious for where this program has been, but when you return what Tech does, that's where you got to be. And I would say it might be a little bit of a disappointment if Tech isn't at least 9-3 this year. Obviously, let's see how the season plays out. But if I had to give a prediction today, and thankfully we'll have our I know y'all will do it every year. I hope to be back on it this year as well for the ACC predictions. If I had to do it today, I think I might go 10-2. You know, I'll lean a little more towards the optimist in me and lean towards that 10-2. But, the sky's the limit. And there's so much opportunity there for Tech. And there's plenty of pitfalls and traps that can trip them up. So, but it's, you know, Jeff, it is fun. And I think Dan would agree with me on this. It is fun to talk about a Virginia Tech football team that we can legitimately say going into the year for the first time since probably 2017. Is a legitimate contender in the ACC race. They are not the favorite, but they are a legitimate contender in what should be a very strong ACC with Tech, Florida State, Clemson, Miami, Louisville, and NC State as probably the big six. And Tech only plays two of them, two of those other five schools. That's a big opportunity. That's a big opportunity to potentially get the Charlotte in a year where you get the Charlotte. But as long as your record's good enough, that's a one-game playoff to get into the college football playoff in this 12-team expanded format. And that, even if you're a big underdog, would be a lot of fun.
All right. I like it, Tim. All right, Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you for the last couple questions here in this podcast.
Sure. So, Tim, give us the pulse of the Virginia Tech football program. What are Hokies bloggers and fans thinking right now on the status of the program?
Yeah, Dan, I think you could probably comment pretty well to this, but there's just a lot of excitement. I think there's just a lot of confidence and belief, especially with the way that's the second two-thirds of that season played out. I was there after that Marshall game when Tech was 1-3. It looked bad. It looked really bad. It looked like the situation we were talking about next year wasn't going to be good. It was gonna be dicey. It's honestly somewhat what UVA might be talking about in terms of a Tony Elliott hot seat, to be honest. But they figured some things out, and they finished that season well. And looking back, obviously, it wasn't the toughest schedule, but they whooped teams. I mean, they didn't just win close games; they whooped them. A lot of teams, you know. Now they couldn't make that jump up when they had a couple of the opportunities, including NC State, but. This team's made some progress. They showed, okay, we're in that middle tier now. Now it's time to jump to the upper tier. And I think rightly there's a lot of confidence and belief that Tech has the pieces to make that jump. And they should. When you return this much talent, when you have an identity, when you have a true quarterback who you know who the guy is going to be, you have all the talent in the world around him, it's all there. And Dan, you could probably speak to this more than I can because I'll be honest. I'm not on Twitter that much. I know you may not be on Twitter that much either, but I try to stay off of it too much. Probably on it a little too more than I would like to be honest. But there is rightly a lot of excitement and buzz. I had a friend of mine reach out to me, an old college buddy who lives outside that 100-mile zone. He's talking about trying to see if he can, you know, figure out whatever way he can get tickets to go to a few games. Not just one or two, but, you know, I think there's going to be more buzz of Tech fans trying to get tickets and buy season tickets than we've seen in a while. And Tech fans, we all know, have been showing up through just brutal, brutal seasons. But it feels like things, you know, it was all the vibe of the program. It was all the veneer. It was all the exterior. But the interior, what happens on Saturdays now is starting to look more like, hey, We're getting back to being Virginia Tech, one of the four biggest football brands in the ACC, playing like one of the four biggest football brands in the ACC ought to. For the first time since those first 2 years of the Justin Fuente era, and then really over a decade plus ago. Dan, I think we're starting to get the feel for that. And, you know, when I was an undergrad, I got the feel a little. That those final 2 years as an undergrad was a lot of fun. When they beat Ohio State, I was a freshman. First few weeks of college. That was a lot of fun. With that victory, that 2015 game when Lane Stadium was packed like crazy, the Clemson game day later on during those first 2 years of Fuente. But it feels like there's something sustainable building that, you know, Dan, you may be able to speak to it better than I am as someone who I know is just a tad older than me. I'll say just a tad. But I think there's a lot of buzz and excitement to see Virginia Tech back potentially like we haven't truly seen, and in a sustainable way like we haven't truly seen in a while.
Yeah. What I'll say to that is, I mean, I look back on 2016 when after Justin Fuente's first season and Virginia Tech won 10 games, and there was excitement, but it was kind of like a cautious excitement that let's see what he can do in year two. Like this type of excitement that the fan base has right now, I feel like goes back to like after 2011, after a Sugar Bowl appearance, like after like I think that was an 11-win season, if I'm not mistaken. Like I think that's more like what it feels like right now. And I think what's changed for me compared to recent seasons was the fact that it wasn't that Tech got some wins and squeaked a couple wins through their schedule. The games that they won this year, they won decisively. Like those type of decisive wins, like this program, you have to go all the way back to like 2011, to that season where Tech, when they're playing a lesser team on the schedule, they're really blowing them out. So I think that's the real difference in the program compared to what we've seen in recent years. It's like you can tell that Virginia Tech's very much on the cusp of being able to be full throttle, like the football program that used to be back in the early 2000s and the late 90s. So I think that's why you're seeing so much excitement from the fan base. And on top of that, bloggers and podcasters, just because it's been a while since that feeling's been here in Blacksburg. With that said, it's open mic time. Tim, I know you've been on the podcast before. You know what to expect, but this is a time in the podcast where we just let you cook. If you got anything you want to get off your chest, this is the time to do it. So we'll start with you, Tim. Let us know what you got on your mind tonight.
I appreciate it, Dan. Look, let's open a session here in what I call Florida State fans, listen in and just be quiet for a second. I know you're excited that you had like 10 guys selected. Congratulations. You're talking about you carry the AC. This is why we're suing the league to get out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to read out the following schools in 2023 NFL draft last year had more picks than the Florida State Seminoles among ACC schools. Clemson, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, Louisville, Miami, Syracuse, and Wake Forest all had more. Florida State actually had only one pick, one player taken in the 2023 NFL draft. Yeah, one player. It's like, you know, all of a sudden Florida State's like, oh yeah, we're Florida State, you know, we get all these draft picks every year. We've been carrying this league for so long. No, you haven't. You went into an abyss for a little bit. Yes, you have prestige. That's the only thing I was carrying you. And to be fair, I say as someone, Virginia Tech also went to the abyss, as did Miami. Clemson was the one football brand firing on all cylinders. But you're by, okay, that was 1 year. We returned a lot of guys. Let's go back to 2022, shall we? Florida State had one player selected in that draft as well. Virginia Tech, by the way, had four, just FYI. They had a coach fired that year, and they still had four players selected the NFL draft. Now, Florida State, credit to you. You know, that one player did go in the first round, Jermaine Johnson. Pretty darn good football player, I'd say. But, you know, So be it. All right. So be it. By the way, the year before that, you did have four, but that actually ranked tied for fourth in the league. Pitt actually led the way with six. Then Clemson, North Carolina, and you were tied with Tech, Miami, and Duke. So I would like to tell Florida State fans to just shut up for a second. Look, I know there are a lot of fans who want to, you know, their schools outside the ACC. Be careful what you wish for, okay? Be careful what you wish for. If the ACC can somehow figure out and survive and be on that tier or right there where their schools can compete with the SEC and the Big Ten, that is a much better situation, I think, than anyone else realizes, because it's much better to be a big fish in a relatively smaller pond than a medium-sized fish in a big pond. And that's not just talking Florida State, Clemson, Miami, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, NC State, Louisville, whoever, Virginia, whatever. Everybody needs to be careful a little. But Florida State, trying to make these claims. This is why we're suing the league, because we had one great draft. Congratulations. Congratulations to all those guys. Great success. Good for them. Good for you having 10 picks. Where were those picks the prior years? Because if I'm doing my math correctly, the prior three drafts, you had six players total selected. Four or five less than you had all those years prior. And oh, by the way, let's go back to 2020 real quick. Let's make that one player selected in that draft. So let's say the prior four drafts, you guys, the Florida State Seminoles, the mighty team that everybody has to bow down to in the ACC and give all their money to. Where have you been to help keep this league going? Oh, you probably helped, you know, keep this promised league down because you became just a mess with a national champion coach in Jimbo Fisher, who, you know, clearly did not do a great job at the end. Willie Taggart, and then Mike Norvell, to his credit, figured it out. But that didn't happen overnight exactly, last I checked. It took a little bit of time, I would say. So, and oh, if we just want to add in a little more, the prior year before that, 2018, two picks in the NFL draft. So nine. They had more picks this year than the prior five drafts. That's an outlier, folks. And look, I think Florida State's going to continue to be on a great trajectory, be a great program under Norvell. But Florida State fans, if you're listening, many of you may be attuned this out by now. I hope not. But just look at the fact that there have been some pretty down years for you guys. And no one said then, oh, Pittsburgh should sue out of the league. NC State, Clemson should just say goodbye. And you're now all getting all up on your high horse now. Look, good for you. Good for you being the sympathetic figure for about 5 minutes for somehow, which shows how messed up this sport is. But you're throwing away real fast here. You're throwing away really fast here. And you know what? Part of me is like, you know what? Screw it. Thank goodness they didn't make the college football playoff. Even though it was a complete wrong, thank goodness. Because, you know, they've gone too big-headed on social media. Calm down. You're suing the league. Congratulations. You won out of the league. We all know it. You don't need the yabber. We know why. You guys won out of the league. Whatever. Congrats on finally having a good football team for the first time in 5 or 6 years.
Let's not forget they had an opportunity to prove that they were the best in the league and show like the caliber of team they were, and then they lost by 60
to Georgia in their bowl game. I'll give them that. Like, they got screwed. I think we all could agree. They got screwed, and their players like, okay, this system's not going to reward what we did. It's just going to be about quarterback play, and, you know, then we're, you know, and apparently Jordan Travis was so good that he got 10 guys drafted, apparently. Apparently the NFL doesn't know what they're talking about. They just they got distracted by Jordan Travis and took other Florida State players well before Travis. But, yeah, I mean, I can't blame them for that, to be honest. But, yeah, I mean, congrats on one good year. He had, okay, two good years. 2023 was pretty good. Or 2022 was pretty good for y'all, too. But congrats on a couple good years after just a mess of like 4 or 5 years.
Jeff, you're up. Open mic time. What do you got on your mind tonight?
Yeah, just a quick thought on the NFL draft this past weekend. You know, it just you know, I've talked about this before, and still, you know, with the end of the Pac-12, and you know, Tim mentioned it a little bit with the way that the direction of the future of college football especially is going. If you look at this year's draft, the SEC had 59 players drafted. The Pac-12 was second with 43, Big Ten 42, ACC 41, and Big 12 31. I mean, that is a really pretty good distribution of NFL talent across the five Power Five leagues. And it's still disappointing to know that the future, it could have been great. It could have been great, you know, had this whole realignment thing gotten under control at any point. I mean, the Pac-12 might have been the best college football league in the country last year, and you can see as many NFL players as they had. And, you know, you scratch that one off the list, then you add the SEC getting Oklahoma and Texas in the Big Ten, getting Oregon, Washington, UCLA, and USC, and you see that distribution of talent, what it might look like in the next few years. And then you look at this year's draft and say, man, if they could have kept it together, we could have had, you know, fairly regional conferences spread around the country and had some great, you know, distributed college football instead of confined to just a couple of leagues. And so I just kind of looked at that when I saw the distribution of talent and said, like, man, we were so close to really having a great future. And then I'm not sure there's anyone who's really looking forward to what it could look like in the next 5 or 6 years. But yeah, that kind of just like, man, look at that. We were almost there and not quite gonna make it.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback on what Jeff's talking about with realignment. Yeah, I think that they're gonna spend the next 20 years unraveling the mess that they made with realignment. I think eventually we'll get back to where we were, which is strong regional conferences, but I think it's just going to take a while, like, to get back to it. I think we're going to be wandering in the desert for a while with these big, crazy nationwide conferences that I don't even know that anybody wanted or asked for, but here we are and we've got them. I think it's a sad day now that the Pac-12 no longer exists in the form that it used to. I think most college football fans, like, regret the fact that the Pac-12 has gone away. And I just think they're going to spend a lot of time unraveling this mess that they've created and that money's created and that greed's created. I think eventually we'll get back to a place where college football looks a lot more like it used to, because people will yearn for those days after what it's turned into. But I think it's going to take us a little while to get back to where we were.
Yeah, and if I, you don't mind me adding in, I think Stuart Mandel, The Athletic, had a great quote on this that back in the fall, you know, where it went something like this, that the decision makers in this sport right now, they're not focused on what the Oregon State father and son want. They're focused on what the Giants fan, the Bronx, would want to watch. That's the focus. That's where we've got, unfortunately, right now. And that's a scary situation. You know, the people that we are trying to get, the more casual fan who want to see the big brands. And look, don't get me wrong. I mean, Texas, Alabama, you know, or whoever, Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, some of these games are going to be fascinating to watch. I'm not going to lie. But, like, we're losing something. And NASCAR is a warning to this business. NASCAR lost its roots chasing the more casual fan. And eventually, and it dried up. They never were able to fully get it. And this isn't to say you can't, but you can't start to lose some of the things that make your sport what it is. And the regionality is part of the great thing about this sport. You know, games like Bedlam are great parts of the sport. Games like the Black Diamond Trophy and the Backyard Brawl are great parts of this sport that have gone by the wayside. Thank goodness the Apple Cup and the Civil War are staying around up in the Pacific Northwest, but we're losing good things. We lost Texas A&M Texas for a little bit. Somehow realignment fixed us there, but that was a great game we lost for a little bit. So
let's also not forget that not every college football fan is an NFL fan and vice versa, because they're different groups of people with different thoughts and different passions for what makes them excited about football. And they're two very different games. So by taking college football and trying to make it resemble NFL, yeah, you might pick up a couple casual fans, but I think you'll lose some fans along the way. So I think that's definitely something they need to keep in mind as they keep moving forward. All right, well, with that, Tim, you've been a great guest. Thank you for coming on tonight. Jeff, as always, I appreciate you being on as well. And with that, we'll sign off. Appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, guys. Bye.